who told her she could make better money in the parlours of the highborn than on the stage. Don't feel sorry for them. They've got more than you, Lily. Even in their grief, they're winning. She opens the other eye, sees the blackness rush in like a tide. At the head of the long rectangular table, the lady of the house is a blob of spilled ink. She is dressed from head to toe in black, and only lifts her veil to sip from the glass of clear liquid that the big man had brought her as she slithered, boneless and broken, into her seat. The big man had held her arm as if she were about to float away, but Lily had seen small chance of that. She's as plump as a pregnant horse. Lily had to force herself not to burst out laughing when the thought occurred to her. She's watching, Lily. Eager, ripe for the plucking. Lily retches, makes a strangled, angry noise as though she has a boot on her throat, and then the spirit comes. Around the table, the half-dozen ladies recoil. The high-ceilinged room is already cold, and the snow from their dainty shoes is melting all over the hard wooden floor. But their skin still rises as goose flesh when the thing emerges from Lily's mouth. Grace? The lady of the house sobs the word. She lifts her veil and flicks her head to the big man who leans, uncomfortable and sullen, by the grand fireplace. You poor, credulous fool. It took Lily a long time to learn this act, to swallow the muslin in a way that allowed her to breathe and talk and make the right sounds as she entered her trance. It took her an age to learn which muscle to employ to bring it back up, to make it dance in the half-light, how to writhe and buck and connect it to the gossamer twine she had hung from the rough ceiling beam during her preparations an hour before.
Grace, is that you?
Her ladyship is sitting forward now. Her face is like dough, shapeless and malleable in the gathering dark. Lily wishes she could give the poor cow some real answers, that she could tell her her dead daughter really is happy and well in the spirit world. She wishes she were more than an actress who has learned to puke up cloth. Instead, she twitches the twine bound to her wrist and revels in the whispers and gasps that meet the movement of the muslin. Lily marvels at herself. She fancies for a moment that she is looking at herself through their eyes. They see a spirit, a translucent pale shape, spinning and twirling in the air above the slumped girl. They hear a low moaning and feel the chill that sweeps down the chimney and scatters the ashes in the cold hearth.
My baby, please tell me you are happy. Tell me you forgive me.
Lily feels the familiar unease, a moment's guilt. She presses her toe against the coin in her shoe, feeling its weight, the certainty of food, of shelter, of handsome things and comfort. She gags again, and she prepares to start the speech she has given 100 times.
"Do not cry for me, dear mother," she whispers in a guttural, rasping voice. I am in a better place, a perfect place. There is no pain, there is no suffering. I do not hold you to account for what...
Lily barely notices the twine snapping overhead. There is a fraction of a second in which she wonders if she attached it to too rough a beam, and then the cloth has fallen upon her face. She starts, jumps in her chair, curses in a voice that is less reedy and ethereal than the one she has used during the performance. She's broken the spell, betrayed herself. Lily seethes. Fucking cheap twine. Going to cost her. They won't pay up now. She'll be lucky if the big man in the beard doesn't wring her neck. It'll cost her a slap or two more when she gets back to her lodgings, and tells her employer that she dropped the bleeding ectoplasm in the middle of the damn seance. She kicks out and connects with the table, knocking the candle onto its side. The lady of the house gives a shriek and lunges forward, glass in hand.